A billion years ago, there was nothing but space. Then one of God's wet farts blew all the planets in place. There were no signs of life on Mars or Venus, but planet Earth was blessed with two baby geniuses. Baby geniuses, we know everything. Baby geniuses, we know everything. Baby geniuses, we know everything. Baby geniuses, tell us something we don't know.
Hello, babies. Welcome to Baby Geniuses. I'm Emily.
I'm Lisa.
Coming to you live from the picket lines.
When I say union, you say power. Union.
Power.
I hate chanting. I mean,
no one feels more awkward about the strike chants than the WGA. Like, everyone I've seen leading the chants on the bullhorn is like trying to figure out how they can sound a little sarcastic.
I know. It's because writers, you know, we're the kinds to like have our arms crossed and be like,
yeah,
sitting in the corner making fun of this shit. It's hard to be earnest.
I will say there are some drama writers who are out there being earnest, and they are carrying a lot of the messaging.
Bless them. Comedy writers, we suck ass.
Yeah.
we're bad at this, but we're trying to get there. Also, my capacity for chanting for more than 10 seconds is really limited.
Oh, yeah.
And walking.
I can't.
Walking
it's
is hard.
A lot.
So, just
to catch everyone up, we're on strike.
Yeah. Forever. It's going to be a while, yeah. I think.
It's going to be a long time. Thankfully, we can continue to podcast because we have never prepared anything for it. Yeah. It is in no violation of our union.
Yeah, there's no writing. Clearly.
We've been picketing, yeah.
I like how all the different picketing locations of the different studios have developed their own sort of ecosystem and vibe. Like,
and reputation.
Yeah, like Netflix is like horny Coachella style.
Everyone's going to Netflix.
I know, too many people, frankly. We need to spread it out a little bit.
I am avoiding it.
I've been avoiding it.
If I can get through this without ever going to Netflix, I'm going to feel like weirdly proud of myself and also still left out.
I liked Netflix best because it is a quick bus ride from my house. So it's the most convenient for me, but I've been avoiding it because there's too many people there and we need to. But then I went to Paramount and that was an even bigger party than Netflix.
Oh, what was it like? I've been to Warner Brothers, Paramount, and Disney.
Yeah, Warner Brothers to me is like laid back dad vibes. Disney's laid back mom. I've heard that Fox is like visiting your parents in Ojai. Like,
yeah, it's, so there's also like this kind of generational like class divide because like a lot of the West Side studios are like
older
money because it's like people who made their who were able to buy a house in the 90s.
Yeah.
And so like
sitcom.
No one could afford to buy those houses now on WGA money. So it's like all of the slightly older writers are on the West Side. And then
it gets younger when you go to mid-city, Netflix, Hollywood kind of area. Yeah, I don't know. Paramount was just packed full of people.
Paramount was packed. There were some side gates at Paramount that are a little bit chiller.
Oh, yeah. I didn't make it all the way around because there was just this like mound of people. And then like Larry Wilmore was there, which was so cool.
Oh, yeah.
Andy Samberg was there.
When did you go?
When did I go? Wednesday?
Yeah, okay. It was Wednesday. I went on Tuesday. I met Phil Rosenthal, which was very exciting. He knows who I am
because
of my appearances on Love It or Leave It and also me posting weird photos of him and stuff of the like painting I did of him. I talked to him for a while. That was fun,
that's so
especially
cool.
Because it was also like that day there was like a karaoke machine and it was all just like actors doing the karaoke. And he was just like, this is ridiculous. This is why are the actors here?
You know, like while we're on strike, we might as well be making the most of it and having fun on the picket. And so they've been like a total party. Like
they have been a total party. It's kind of fun, too, because everyone's like, It's like a party, but it's better than a party because you can just go up and talk to anyone and they're willing to talk to you.
Yeah, I know. I was
like, the vibes are good.
I was so shy on the first day. Also because I was a little bit high and it was the kind of high that made me like introverted. So I just like had on my sunglasses and I like, wasn't talking to anyone and I probably seemed like a bitch. I was just too high. And then I've slowly been working on my social anxiety by going to the picket and just like talking to people.
Good.
It's been good, good training.
I mean, I have just been like going straight up to people. I saw Ike Barinholtz at Paramount and I was like, I have got to talk to him about Jeopardy right now because he won the Celebrity Jeopardy tournament.
Yeah, he was good at it.
And he's going to compete in the normal Tournament of Champions.
Wow.
Against like the mega nerds. Wow. And I was so excited to talk to him about it. And he was just like, I'm going to get my ass kicked.
It's fun. I don't know. I mean, I hate being on strike. I hate it.
Yeah. So there's this like discourse that's been happening where some people have been like, hey, you guys need to stop making this look so fun because you have it easy. And
no,
like,
we don't.
Also, it's just like, you know, people have been trying to like dampen the like jokiness of it. And like a lot of writers are saying stuff like that's like, you know, it's like, I'm not supposed to be walking this much. And like, I could see how if you're a crew member who's like out in the sun on your feet 16 hours a day, the complaints of writers seem a little bit like petty, but
it's self-deprecating, though. It's about it's my own body and sucking. Like, yeah. I flared up my, like, pelvic problems this week by walking on the picket.
Right.
That's no shade on people who have to be out there.
I just feel like we should be allowed to, like, make jokes and make funny signs because that's how we get through stuff.
We literally can't help it.
I want to reiterate, like, I've said this online. I'll say it on the podcast. Like, I think what crews go through is inhumane and their working conditions need to change as well.
Yeah, this is a fight for everyone's rights. I mean, this it's
if we lose our union fight, they are fucked.
Yeah.
Like we are one of the most powerful unions in Hollywood, and whatever happens with this negotiation is going to have ripple effects on all the other Hollywood union negotiations. If we do not win against the studios, there is now no precedent for the studios to give in on any of the other unions' demands. So
yeah, this is not just about us.
It's not just about us. And also, like, listening to the stories that IATSE members were telling a couple years ago when they were like gearing up to maybe go on strike, which I think they should have, I was struck by how many of the issues that are occurring on sets are so related to the problems that writers are facing because like not having writers on set is part of the reason why there are these like late rewrites from showrunners who are spending all day on set and then going home and rewriting and then sending pages out at 1 a.m. Like that won't happen if we get writers on set. If we have enough writers in a writer's room that you can do the rewrites in time to like turn it in. And like,
yes, they're just all connected.
It's all connected. It's all related to the same issue, which is being squeezed, which is,
being so squeezed and them wanting to turn this into basically a gig job and saying that Carol Lombardini saying that writers are lucky to get, you know, term deals is like so revealing. Like she kind of handed us a gift with that one.
Yeah.
And this is like, I mean, underneath all my like flippant, jokey, having fun, you know, response to this is just an extreme existential angst about my career and my position and everyone else's as well.
Yeah. And the like we've made a lot of choices to invest in this as a career.
Yeah.
And it could go away.
It could go away. Could be replaced by a robot. I don't actually think I could be replaced by a robot, but I don't think Ted Sarandos knows that I can't be replaced by a robot. And that bothers
me. That's the issue.
It's that he CEOs think like, well, we'll just have the robots write the stuff that isn't super high quality. And that'll have the and robots do that part.
We'll have a freelance writer do a rewrite and a punch up.
Yeah, it's scary.
It's bleak. I don't like it.
I don't like it. I just got that letter yesterday about how my health insurance is going to run out too because I like didn't earn enough credits.
Oh, shit.
It's just so frustrating because I'm like, I can't earn. We can't work right now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That is really scary. There are a lot of people who are about to lose their health insurance as a result of this.
A lot of people. It sucks.
It really does.
So I have all those mixed emotions about it. I'm not just like, yay, strike, you know, even if it seems like I'm having a good time.
Yeah, we're all very aware of what this is costing everyone.
Yeah.
But it truly is worth it.
Yeah.
I had like a very weird experience at Paramount where we were like, you know, marching. And, you know, one of the things that happens at these strikes is like we try and get the cars to honk their horns in support.
Yeah.
And this one guy in a convertible was driving by and he like honked his horn. He was like, they need to pay up. And everyone was like, yeah. And then when the cheer died down, he said, fucking Jews. It was so jarring and surprising. And also it was just like, who do you think is in the WGA? You think like, there's not Jews like, in the WGA? Just look at this crowd. How about?
What did he look like? Was he like an old guy? Like what?
He was like 40. Oh, like just a 40-year-old white guy.
What the fuck?
It was so fucking weird.
Did people yell anything at him? Or were you just...
He drove off right after he said that. Oh, it was just like... God. Everyone was just stunned and were just... People were like, did he just say what I think he said?
It's terrifying.
But then there was just like way more honking and like it kind of just like went slightly uncommented on. It was very fucking weird.
Oh my God.
But
we got to guard a neutral gate together. That was fun.
Oh yeah.
Which meant we just got to like hang out.
do you want to explain what a neutral gate is? Because I've tried and I'm like, I think I'm getting this right, but I could be very wrong.
So it's a gate that the studio can like technically, legally have people come in and out of without us picketing because they are not having, because it's for just like staff. It's not for like writers or like people. What is it?
Okay, wait, you want me to try?
Wait, okay.
I feel like we should back up. So all of these Hollywood studios, there are these big lots and they have, the way you get in is you go through, they have a bunch of different gates.
They have gates.
They're usually like different ones on different streets. And we are allowed to picket at almost all of the gates. But the studios have reserved some of the gates as quote unquote neutral gates where like administrative employees, anyone who's going to work who's not involved with like a struck production.
Right.
So like they're not going there to work on like an episode of Hacks that like where the writers are on strike. It's like the administrative assistants, the PAs are going in and out because Teamsters have agreed they will not cross the picket line.
Yeah.
And what the studios have been trying to do is send Teamsters who are arriving to work on struck productions, they're trying to send them to the neutral gates so that there won't be picketers there, so that they won't be crossing a picket line by coming to
they're
work.
They're trying to sneak people in.
They're trying to sneak people in who are supposed to go through the main gate and who are supposed to go past. So one of the jobs that is happening at at the pickets is people have been sent to not picket, but just look at the neutral gate and notice if there are cars going in and out and take pictures so we can make sure that they're not sneaking trucks in.
Right. So Emily generously joined me at my task. It was funny because I showed up to Warner Brothers to meet up with a friend and then immediately a captain was like, okay, you're going to guard the neutral gate. And I was like, oh, okay. Bye, Chris. Nice to see you. I'm not going to say no because I didn't want to just be like, I'm just here for hanging out vibes. I'm not here to like do work. No, do what your strike captain asks you to do. You know, we're here to do a job. I went there and then you came to hang out. And yeah, there wasn't a whole lot of action. It was like just sitting out in the meltingly hot sun. And then I had to pee a lot. And so I peed many times behind a sign in front of
using your
pee style. Yeah. And I felt like you were like, you sicko, because I was having way too much fun doing that. I really enjoy it. Every time I do it, I feel like I've gotten away with a little crime. But nobody knows.
I think you have.
I think I have.
I think that is a literal crime.
Oh, yeah. Peeing in public. It's just so natural. I don't know. And I was in the bushes. Nobody could see me.
No one could see.
I peed so much.
I had, I got like, you and I have been talking a lot about like, okay, what's the bathroom situation? Like, what's the closest bathroom at everyone?
Yeah, and like, that's my least favorite thing about picketing is just like having, I have to go to the bathroom a lot.
I was shocked because day one, I was out there for 3 hours. Like when I'm at home, just I pee like a couple times an hour.
Yeah.
Just all the time. Just whenever I have like even the slightest sort of tingle,
yeah.
I go.
Yeah.
But like something happened on the day one of the picket where I was just like, I was out there for 3 hours. I did not have to go.
Yeah.
And like another day I went out, like went to the like picketed for a while, drank a fucking chai latte because someone sent a free coffee truck, and then went to a restaurant for lunch and sat through the whole meal. And then I was like, oh, I should go to the bathroom.
Wow.
Like, this is, who am I? But day two, I was at Warner Brothers and I had very soon had started having stomach issues. And I was like, uh-oh. And I was like, I need to know where the bathroom is because I didn't have to use it yesterday. And someone was like, oh, there's one over there. There's one over there. And one of my friends was like, oh, I actually might. My money manager's office is nearby and I have to go pick something up there anyway. So I might use the bathroom there. And I was like, okay, I don't think I'll need it. I think this might just be a fart. Like, I think it's fine. And then all of a sudden I was like, hey, where's your money manager's office? And we like hustled over there and we walked in and I was like, can I use your bathroom? Like before I could even finish. And they were like, yes, it's down the hall. It's unlocked. And it was like, it was so nice. It was like a nice corporate bathroom. And like, in one of these office buildings, and I was just in there for a while. I told my friends to go back to the picket without me. I was like, don't leave me behind. Yeah, leave me behind. It's fine. I felt really bad, but I was like, I was alone in there. It was really nice. And I was like, I can't remember what floor of the building it was on. Because I was like, I could come back and no one would know because it's the opposite direction from the from the elevator. But then when I was coming down on the elevator, someone else got in and then like, the doors opened up on the third floor and I like got out because I thought it was the lobby. And then I was like, oh, oops, I thought this was the lobby. I got back in and they saw me with my sign. It was like these two like middle-aged guys and they were like, oh, cool. And I was like, yeah. Oh, they were like, where are you trying to go? And I was like, oh, I'm just trying to go back down to the lobby. I was just using the bathroom. And they were like, you can use the bathroom here. And I was like, oh, I already went, but thank you. And they were like, well, anytime.
Oh my God.
You always come back.
That's so good.
So that was cool. Like people are really like, supportive of the strike, which is cool.
Yeah, they are.
It does feel like it's the only thing happening in the world. And I know that that's not true, but in my mind, it feels very all consuming.
I'm curious to see how things will go as this drags on, you know, over summer and people sort of lose interest in it. But I don't know. I think people know what to do. Like people have been having special events at the, you know, strikes and the pickets and, you know, just kind of keeping up the energy. Like I think.
Yeah.
It'll be rough when it gets hot, but, you know.
It'll be rough when it gets hot. I think we're going to see an uptick in parasol purchasing.
Yeah, I was thinking I could use a little parasol the other day.
It would be great to have, like, a combination parasol picket sign.
Yeah.
Is there a way to do that? Just, like, have, like, a WGA on strike printed parasol with like maybe just like flaps up on it or something. There's got to be a way to do
this. This is a brilliant idea. I mean, you could get a parasol and paint like strike language upon it.
That's true.
Customized.
But it has to be visible to the street.
Yeah.
Or, like to the cars driving by.
Yeah. But if you get
so
like,
how do we do
if
that?
If you get like a white parasol and then you write like in black letters, red letters on it.
Yeah.
If it's big enough.
I'm like, how do it has to be kind of like maybe you just get like a white umbrella and that has like a little lip that comes down.
Yeah.
But I don't know. This is a question for our listeners. If any engineers out there want to like design me a strike sign parasol, I think that would do really well.
Yeah.
There has been I've been like. This thing is happening where. They made a bunch of blank signs and people have been like writing slogans on them and it's really awesome. But then like people leave their strike signs there and then a lot of times we'll pick up a random one the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you don't bring your sign home, you're kind of stuck with whatever's there.
Yeah, because they've run out of blank ones.
Yeah, some of them are great and some of them are like so embarrassing.
So bad. Yeah, I've been.
Lisa just did the stinky sign with her hand.
You know, it's like it's also like I prefer my own jokes, you know, but I think if other people pick up my signs that I've written, they'd be like, ew, this sucks. You know, it's like.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's that. That's an element, too. I got one that just said, we're going to be okay. And I was mad.
That's not right.
It's not right. It's wrong for a number of reasons. Number one, it's corny. Number two, it's a terrible strike slogan because the whole point is we're not going to be okay. That's why we're striking.
Are you, like, is that message for the other writers? Because that's not what the picket...
That's not what the signs are for.
Yeah.
Oh, it really made me mad. And I had to put it back and get a blank one. I was like, I was complaining about it so much that someone I was walking with had a blank sign and they were like, here, take mine. And then I wrote gas, grass, or ass. No one writes for free.
That's
and
great.
I've been just putting it in my car and people have been giving me dirty looks.
That's great.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about anything non-strike related?
I do have spider drama, which I promised. I promised I would bring.
Oh, yes.
Hobby drama regarding pet spiders this episode.
Are you talking about the fan email we got?
We got a fan email. I also
I love it.
I have more information from my friend Karen
who has
pet spiders, and I have the original post that inspired my interest in this.
Yes.
So Karen showed me this post, and I'm not here to make fun of this person. I think it's because I'm not in this community. I do not have pet spiders. I just thought this post was funny. They posted on Instagram. This is someone who breeds spiders and sells them. And she had this post. It's like, it's come to my attention that blank, I'm not going to call out any names, has made a post pulling up my name as well as blank, stating we are going around telling people that her hylas babies are inbred. As if I honestly have time to do this. I don't even have time to make this post yet. Here we are. And then she made a joke that my spiders die. I have over 300 spiders, and with a short lifespan, obviously someone is going to be dying more so than your average spider keeper. It's called odds and ratio. I have a ton of old spiders. And they keep going. But I love this so much because it's the one time that saying I have a ton of old spiders is a flex. And also, you can't see this, but the font that she posted this in looks like it was designed by spiders. And then my friend Karen followed up and said one thing in the spider pet community is that jumpers are considered girl spiders by gatekeepers in the hobby, and tarantulas are like the only real spiders that anyone should own. And those are, you know, some debates.
Oh, like girl spiders, like a girl drink, like just like not for like the real ones.
Totally. Which sucks because a lot of people start by collecting jumpers. Apparently, that's like a good beginner spider, which to me, I'm like, ugh. Why would you have that in your house? And she's like, it's similar to the bird hobby where some people only respect people who collect like big birds like parrots, and they think that like finches and budgies are just starter birds. Yeah.
God, people are such jerks sometimes.
They're such gatekeepy assholes, but it's so funny to think of.
Yeah.
I never thought this would apply to spiders in my whole life, but now that I know it, I'll never forget it. And then finally, someone wrote in to the podcast. My youngest daughter and I discovered the pet spider hobby on TikTok around 2019. We keep and breed a species commonly called regal jumping spiders. Not they collect girl spiders. They are really wonderful pets. Imagine a quarter-sized kitten that is also part robot. What?
What?
Are they affectionate?
Oh, like- I was like a quarter sized. I was thinking like it's a quarter of the size of a kitten. And I was like, that's enormous.
No,
but
like
then
little...
I was like, oh, no, it's the size of a quarter.
A kitten. But like, are they affectionate? That's what I don't understand. Spiders don't seem like they have thoughts and feelings to me. But
yeah,
they said you asked for stories of drama in the world of this hobby. And immediately I thought of an issue being discussed in the community. Breeders selling wild caught specimens advertised as captive bred. Why is this important? Lisa, to put this in horse terms, this would be like advertising a papered 6-year-old horse pictured going over a show jump, buying it, and the trailer arriving with a 16-year-old pregnant, never handled Mustang. Thank you so much for making an analogy to horses so that I can understand this. I now picture this perfectly well. Captive bred and raised spiderlings have grown up associating contact with humans, with food, and are easier to handle. Also, their parents and true age are known. Most wild-caught females will be pregnant unless they are not sexually mature when collected. So, yeah, it's just a whole scam.
But the thing about that, I mean, the pregnancy thing is really interesting.
Yeah, that most wild-caught spiders are pregnant. They're just pregnant all the time.
So because it's like, once bred females don't need to mate again after giving birth, they store sperm and continue becoming pregnant their whole lives.
What?
This is not ideal for a spider purchased to be a pet, as she will spend most of her life secluded in a nest. Ooh. Also, she'll make a ton of baby spiders.
I'm gonna throw up.
Also, wild caught adult can't be aged and may only live a few more months.
Beyond being dishonest to future pet owners, this also brings up issues concerning the legality of selling the spiders. Here in Texas, native species cannot be kept as pets, and capturing them to be sold outside Texas is legally questionable. Yeah.
So fascinating.
I love this. I love this so much.
Yeah.
If you have drama from any other pet community, especially if it's a weird pet, I'm here for it.
Or any other hobby communities.
Honestly, any. But I like the animal ones best because I don't know. I think when it involves a live animal, people get extra intense. I was on I looked at a spider message board that Karen sent me, and there was like someone who found like a yellow sac spider, and they were like, oh, these are kind of highly poisonous. Like if they bite you, it's kind of a bad, it's like a brown recluse bite or something where it can get kind of really infected. So they flushed it. And they wrote about this on a message board. And oh my God, people got so mad at them for flushing the spider.
Were they mad, like, because it was inhumane to the spider or?
Yeah. Okay. A lot of them were just saying, the bite's not that big of a deal. Like, they're not actually that bitey. And you should have done more research and you should have asked us before flushing it. And you flushed, like, a perfectly good spider. And then other people were like, well, they are really bitey. And the bites are bad, and I don't think you did the wrong thing, and you just flushed a spider like it's not that big of a deal, and you just like found it wild in your house. So, you know, and it was just like a very mixed response, but people kind of piled on her.
Oh, wow.
I just like the idea that it's like a pet that you can just flush them.
Yeah.
It's normal to do that.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
Yeah, it's great.
I feel like there was something else I wanted to do before we did Chunch Chat. Oh, follow up to an endorse horse from a previous episode. I don't know if it was an official endorse horse, but I have gotten very mixed reviews from people about Understance bras, which are the ones that I said were working for me. I got one listener saying that it really like changed their life. And then another one saying that their customer service is terrible. The bras got sent to the wrong address and they refused to give them a refund or like resend it or anything. And like there are a bunch of bad reviews of their customer service online. So I will say proceed with caution.
Yeah.
The way I approach bra shopping is I am just resigned to the fact that I am going to lose a lot of money pursuing a good bra. And I am being foolish. I'm not saying that's to be like, I'm rich. It's like, I am rich, but also I've just decided to spend a stupid amount of money on bras because I'm an idiot. But that's not your situation. Proceed with caution.
A poor investment. They really devalue the moment you drive them off the lot, so to speak. They depreciate very quickly.
Ugh, that's another thing about the strike is I'm like, I have to wash my bras more than I would otherwise.
Oh,
because
you're home sweating.
Just sweaty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is really affecting us in a lot of ways. I mean, it's true. I'm like, what do I have that's comfortable enough to wear while walking around for hours?
I missed the day when they were giving away the free shirts. And so I've just been like making my own. I just made one that I haven't worn yet that Peter really hated.
Why?
I got two different fonts of iron-on letters. Like, one's like a big classic sort of like rounded, like retro font. And then the other one is basically Comic Sans and it's smaller. And so in the big letters, it says writer on strike. And then in the smaller letters, it says farter on duty.
Wow, you're going to be in trouble when farters go on strike.
I know.
And you have to withhold. Oh, that's going to be dangerous.
But I'm open to other slogans if people want to send.
I can't think of anything better than that.
Yeah.
Sorry, Peter. I have an endorse horse.
Ooh, hell yeah. Let me hear it.
roll the theme.
Lay it on me.
All right.
Suck it to me, mama.
Baby geniuses endorse letting nature take its course. Endorphins pump from the source when they hop up on that horse. Two babies, one endorse horse.
Endorse horse.
Endorsing services and items, no remorse. Two babies, one endorse horse.
Endorse horse.
Riding off into the sunset, now here's something we endorse.
Julia Wirtz's new book, Impossible People, is finally out and you can buy it. And
oh my gosh.
It's so good. It's a graphic novel, if you like to use that term. And it's sort of a memoir, and it's about her path to sobriety. And, you know, it's, and I'm in it, and some of our other friends.
Yeah.
And every scene I'm in, I'm saying something so dirty or so bitchy.
Like what?
I can't think of an example. I'm just like always saying something in there that I completely forgot I ever said. But yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's a really, I think it's her best work yet. It's so, so, so good. And so
that's very exciting.
Everyone should buy it. And she's like on tour right now and doing readings and stuff. And I'm going to join her at Skylight next month.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Okay, great. That's a good endorser.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if I have one.
We got a lot of recommendations from our listeners to listen to the podcast, Too Scary Didn't Watch.
Oh, yeah.
And I just started listening today and I really like it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I started.
I started listening to Las Culturistas finally.
What do you think?
Which is great. I have one complaint.
Okay.
Which is that their like interstitial stinger music ends with a sound effect that is also the sound effect my headphones use when they're running out of battery.
Yes, they do.
And it's, I'm sure it'll pass and it won't stress me out anymore. But for the you know, now that I'm just like starting, it's stressing me out. Every
yeah,
time
it's
I
a,
hear
it's
it.
A like, boop, boop, doop, doop, like that kind of, yeah.
Like, doop, doop, doop.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big problem.
Big problem.
Big problem. I've also been like listening to the like sidecasts of Script Notes where they're like interviewing people on the picket lines, and like listening to that while I'm driving is really stressful because all of the like man on the street audio has like a ton of horn honking because it's recording at the strikes, and I'm just like, ah, what are you like?
I hate it so much when there's like sirens or something like that kind of noise in songs because
yes.
I'm listening while I'm driving. Why would you do that
not
to me?
Cool.
Stressing me out.
I guess I don't have an endorse horse then.
Too Scary Didn't Watch is a good podcast because they're just describing scary movies. So if you're too scared to watch, they will describe it to you. I just wanted
like
to
that.
Say that. So I started listening to the one about Smile because it's a movie I kind of want to see, but I'm scared. And when they start describing it, it's immediately clear that it's a ripoff of It Follows.
Oh, really?
Yes, very much so. But also, oh, well, who cares?
Who cares?
Who cares?
I've still got to see It Follows.
I love it so much.
Yeah.
I watched his other movie, Under the Silver Lake. Didn't like
it. Not good?
Didn't like it.
Interesting.
Really hated it. I mean, it had so many ideas that I was kind of like, I respect this for being so weird and for having, like, it has like
having ideas.
Yeah, and it has like animated sequences and weird zines. And I'm like, cool. Yes, love that. And then it has beautiful shots. And then it's just, it doesn't hold together. I think making movies is very difficult.
Yeah. It seems hard.
There's so many steps. It can go wrong in so many ways. I don't know. I feel a lot of people like that movie. It just wasn't for me. No shade. You don't have.
Is it time for Chunch Chat?
Sure.
It's time for Chunch Chat, a regular segment where we talk about any news of the world of Martha Stewart's pony, Ben Chunch.
Chunch. When the clock strikes noon, we could have a picnic lunch, fine wine, full moon, and we're chatting about Chunch. Ben Chunch.
I do not have any Chunch news today. I got nothing.
Wow.
I got nothing.
All right.
Should I pick a pig? A while ago we did like, what was it? It was like a wiki list of pigs.
Yeah.
And then
I
was like, oh, I could pick a pig if I ever run out of things to do during Chunch Chat.
Oh yeah. I don't remember that. I don't remember anything.
List of individual pigs. Yeah, there's gotta be a pig on here I can talk about. yeah, I forgot there was a pig named Pigasus. Um, Okay, I'll talk about Hog Kong.
Okay.
Hog Kong was a pig that was an estimated 1,140 pounds and was a wild hog killed in August 2004 by Larry Early at his 22-acre farm near Leesburg, Florida, using a Smith & Wesson. And it was a pig named Hog Kong. That's it. That's all the information about that.
That's pretty good. That's pretty
not
good.
Hogzilla?
No.
That would be so much better.
I know. Hog Kong. It's like hard to say.
Hog Kong's like King Kong.
Yeah.
It's like trying so hard to be worse than Hogzilla.
You know, there is a Hogzilla. Maybe that's why. Oh, well, if you scroll up a little bit, Hogzilla is a name given to a wild hog that was shot and killed in Alapaha, Georgia on June 17th, 2004. So also in 2004. So it was killed very shortly before Hog Kong. And that one was killed by Chris Griffin on Ken Hollyoak's farm and hunting reserve. Alleged to be 12 feet long and to weigh 1,000 pounds, so smaller than Hog Kong. Scientists confirmed that Hogzilla actually weighed 800 pounds and was between 7.5 and 8 feet long. So they exaggerated.
I'd still prefer Hogzilla 2 to, like, Hog Kong.
I like Hog Kong, I guess, because it's awkward to say and it's funny.
It's really rough. It's glottally difficult.
Glottally. It sticks in the glots.
Yeah. God, my glots are getting such a workout with this picketing schedule.
Oh my God, my glots are going to be so ripped by the end of this.
All right, does that conclude Chunch Chat?
Yeah.
We'll be right back with One on Fun.
One on fun.
Okay, wait, I have one.
Okay.
Lisa. Here I am having one. This is what it sounds like when I have one.
so pleased with herself. Smug.
What would be like the strike sign that you'd be like least happy to be carrying around? Like if I won a bet where I got to write you a strike sign that you would hate, what should I put on it?
I saw one the other day that I was so confused by. I mean, I can't just think of one off the top of my head.
Right.
I saw one and it said, I'm sorry if you wrote this. I just don't understand. Would it help to have Cher from Clueless explain it? Get in the kitchen, move some things around. You can totally party with writers. And then it has a lot of arrows on it. Like, look at this.
Would it help to have Cher from Clueless explain it? Get in the kitchen, move some things around. You can totally party with writers. Oh.
Is this a reference?
Party with zero writers?
Like, there's...
I don't know.
There's, like, diagrams on it. There's arrows. There's symbols.
What the fuck is that? What does that mean?
I don't know. Maybe they started writing it and they were like, I have it. I have an idea. And then
That sounds like something someone dreamed or something.
Yeah,
like,
that's why I took a picture of it. Because I was like, this is the weirdest thing I've seen. I've been going through a lot of picket signs. You know, I was going through a big pile trying to choose, and I was just like, what the hell?
Yeah.
What was the idea? I don't even know what the idea was.
Look this up. I'm like, I want to Google it. Like, is that a quote?
It's a puzzle. I'm not even mad. I'm just like, what? I want to know what the mystery is.
Yeah.
What is it? Do you know? Are you fine?
I can't find anything. I don't know. That sucks.
I'm a big Clueless fan. I've seen it a lot. So I'm like, I feel like I should be able to get what this is.
Yeah.
It's that one.
Oh, wait. Oh, you know what? Okay. I found the explanation. So Cher, during a classroom debate in Clueless, says,
So like right now, for example, the Haitians need to come to America, but some people are all, what about the strain on our resources? Well, it's like when I had this garden party for my father's birthday, right? I put RSVP because it was a sit-down dinner, but some people came that like did not RSVP. I was like totally bugging. I had to haul ass to the kitchen, redistribute the food, and squish in extra place settings. But by the end of the day, it was like, the more the merrier. And so if the government could just get to the kitchen, rearrange some things, we could certainly party with the Haitians. And in conclusion, may I please remind you, it does not say RSVP on the Statue of Liberty. Thank you very much.
Okay. Terrible job turning that into a protest sign.
So this is like a
terrible
misquoted, like poorly transcribed version of that sort of idea in general. I don't like most of the signs that are just quotes from existing. Well, I don't know. It depends. I've seen some Succession ones that are good and some I think you should leave ones. And but in general, I like the ones that are
original
or puns or I don't know, whatever. Yeah.
So what would be the worst one I could do for you then? Like one that's like, bazinga.
I'd love that.
I love money.
I'd love that. I don't know. I guess it depends. Like, I can't think. I guess if it was just like, it would be this. It'd be like something that's an idea that didn't
something
just
like
doesn't...
obscure that people would have that you would have to have a lot of conversations about.
Yeah, people are just looking at it like, huh, what? Like it should be something that a car, you know, a driver can read while they're driving by.
Yeah.
Like a quick idea. So I'm so sorry if you wrote this sign. Just completely tore it apart. Which is not the energy we should have in this communal.
It's a note. It's just a note.
It's just a note.
That's all.
I like that sign that was just like, I have notes.
Yeah.
You know, I don't, there's some that are like very aggressive towards like studio execs, like creative execs. And I'm like, well, this isn't their fault. Like, they're not the ones who, it's like,
yeah, they also hate what's
happening.
They
also hate this. They would like to continue making shows and they want us to be paid properly and stuff. But I don't know. Whatever.
Well, you have to ask me a question now.
Yes, I do. I want to ask you a question that maybe you don't want to answer.
Ooh, interesting. Like, did you have one in mind, or do you just want me to be uncomfortable?
Well, I had one in mind, and this is partially based on something. Someone wrote in an email about splurging on some handmade earrings made by an artist, and they were, because I had drawn a diary comic about this, like splurging on some earrings that I found on Instagram that were made by someone, and I felt bad about it. I felt guilty because I'm like, I shouldn't be shopping right now. But I bought them and I don't regret it. They're great. So I was wondering if you had anything like that in your recent past where you were like, oh, I shouldn't. And then you bought it.
And then I was happy about it.
Yeah, a splurge, something.
Yeah. So there were these pants that I think they were like advertised to me on Instagram at some point. And then I like bookmarked them and I just kept looking at them on the website. They were like $200. And I just kept looking at them and I kept looking at them and I just didn't buy them. And then they like went out of stock when I was like, fuck it, I'm going to buy them. And then they weren't available. Ugh. And I was like, fuck.
Now you want them
and
even
then
more.
I checked. Yeah. And then they finally came back into stock and I was like, I'm going for it. And then I bought them and I was like, what the fuck did I just do? Why did I do that? And let me tell you, they fit amazing. They look awesome. I get so many compliments on them. They are like the only pair of like high-waisted pants that have ever like really fit me and like look good, and they're like comfortable and like I fucking love them. I'm like, I try not to wear them too often because I feel like I have that energy when I'm wearing them where I'm like, I know that these pants are like a big deal. And like, I feel like when I wear them, I get too excited where I'm like, oh, when it's like a nice thing, I want to wear them. And then people are like, I'm worried that like people who I only see at like sort of fancy parties are like, are those your only pants? Because I always want to wear them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What are these pants?
They're made by this company, Ose Duro. Mm. they're like block printed, like hand printed, like cotton, like, and it's, I'm like, I forget what the deal is with that company. It's like, I feel like it's based in, oh yeah, it's headquartered in Ghana, and they have a studio in Vancouver, and they just like all their textiles are sort of like block printed and really like irregular and cool and like colorful and yeah, I'm like, it's high time that I bought another pair, but I haven't found any that have a pattern that I like as much as the ones that I already bought. But yeah, that's I think maybe my the splurge that I think about that paid off.
Yeah,
you
know,
you think
so
about the splurges that don't pay off, but
yeah. Oh, and a good pair of pants. I mean,
yeah. And I'm like excited about summer and like how often I can wear them, maybe because they're like lightweight.
What are they, like linen or cotton? Or
they're just like cotton. They're just like thin, comfortable cotton. And they're going to get more comfortable the more I wash them and wear them, I think. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. And then I've had a few splurges recently that did not pay off. So
no, I hate it when that happens.
Not going to talk about it.
You know what?
What about you?
This is related to clothes peripherally, but I tried dyeing clothes for the first time, like with grit dye. And oh my God, I like want to dye all my clothes because I have some Big Bud Press stuff that I've had for a really long time. And so like it's still holding together structurally because their clothes are really high quality and the materials are really good, natural fabric and all that. But like the colors have faded. And so I took one of the old faded sweater and I dyed it. And now it's this like jacaranda color. It's like this beautiful pinky purple and it's so pretty. And I'm just like, ugh. And now I
want. I love being able to like breathe new life into things like that.
Oh my God. It felt so good. I can't wait to do more. And it was so fun to like mix because I mixed two different dye colors. So I didn't quite know how it would come out. So yeah, I'm totally dye pilled. And now I want to do all my clothes.
Hell yeah.
And I want to try dyeing shoes too.
Oh yeah. When I went to Joann Fabrics to get like the t-shirt customization stuff to make my like strike shirts, they also had a bunch of like white sneakers with dye like that are just there for you to do dyeing your sneakers.
Yes. I have some really old like faded Hokas that I want to try dyeing.
Ooh. Let me know how that turns out.
I will.
Okay. Does that conclude One on Fun?
Yeah.
We will be right back with Wiki of the Week.
Trans representation in media is at an all-time high, with trans entertainers gracing the screens large and small.
But trans voices, especially Black trans voices, are rarely centered in our own stories.
That's why we bring you a new limited series called We See Each Other, the podcast, co-hosted by me, journalist, and better half of the Max Fun podcast, Fanti, Trayvell Anderson,
and me, award-winning journalist and media personality, Char Jocelle.
All of it is based on my book, We See Each Other, a Black trans journey through TV and film.
Now listen, folks, we're having a very different kind of conversation. It's giving kitchen table talk.
Mm-hmm. We get into the discourse, honey. Tune into We See Each Other, the podcast at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get Slayworthy audio.
The Legend of Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom.
Diablo 4.
Final Fantasy 16.
Street Fighter 6.
Baldur's Gate 3.
Starfield.
Spider-Man 2.
Master Detective Archives Rain Code for Nintendo Switch? No, is that just me?
It's a huge time for video games.
You need somebody to tell you what's good, what's not so good, and what's amazing.
I'm Jason Schreier.
I'm Maddie Myers.
And I'm Kirk Hamilton. We're the hosts of Triple Click, a video game podcast for anyone who likes games.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Welcome to Wiki of the Week. This week's Wikipedia page was sent to us by Bobby. Thank you, Bobby.
Thank you, Bobby.
It is the Wikipedia page for Mongolian death worm.
Death worm. this article is about the legendary monster in Mongolia for the 2010 film, see, Mongolian death worm film.
The Mongolian death worm
in Mongolian, Olgoy Korkoy, or large intestine worm, is a creature alleged to exist in the Gobi Desert. However, no evidence has ever been found to support this belief.
Fine. Tales of the creature first came to Western attention as a result of Roy Chapman Andrews' 1926 book, On the Trail of Ancient Man. The American paleontologist described secondhand tales of the monster that he heard at a gathering of Mongolian officials. None of those present ever had seen the creature, but they all firmly believed in its existence and described it minutely.
In 1983, a specimen of Tartar sand boa, known as the dwarf sand boa, desert sand boa, or Tartar sand boa, it's a type of snake, was shown to locals who claimed to have seen Olgoy Korkoy, and they confirmed that this was the same animal.
Oh.
So it's a snake.
It's a snake.
Okay.
Appearance. In On the Trail of Ancient Man, Andrews cites Mongolian Prime Minister Damdin Bazar, who in 1922 described the worm. It is shaped like a sausage, about 2 feet long, has no head nor leg, and it is so poisonous that merely to touch it means instant death. It lives in the most desolate parts of the Gobi Desert. If you say so.
Wow.
It's so poisonous.
It's so poisonous. In 1932, Andrews published this information, very loose to call that information, again, in the book The New Conquest of Central Asia, adding, it is reported to live in the most arid, sandy regions of the Western Gobi. Andrews, however, did not believe in the creature's existence.
Oh, okay.
Part of me wonders, like, what the... whether this was something that they told people who they didn't want to be hanging out with. Yeah. They were like, get out of here. We've got very scary worms.
The worm is said to inhabit the western or southern Gobi. In the 1987 book, Altjin Tsagat... I can't say that.
Okay. It's a language. Yeah.
It's a language I can't speak. Ivan Mackerel cites a Mongolian legend which described the creature as traveling underground, creating waves of sand on the surface, which allowed it to be detected. It is said it can kill at a distance, either by spraying a venom at its prey or by means of electric discharge.
What?
It primarily lives and burrows underground, only rarely coming to the surface. Man, this makes me want to watch Tremors. Have you ever seen Tremors?
It makes me want to watch Beetlejuice.
Me too.
I have not seen Tremors, but is it about this, basically?
Yeah, they're sandworms and they're huge. I guess it's like kind of like Beetlejuice if it was only about the worms. And it wasn't super surreal. But yeah, it's like a funny kind of horror movie.
I mean, I really wonder, like, how much of those movies were inspired by this. Or are there actual sandworms that we don't know about?
I don't know.
Investigations. The animal was the basis of a short story, Olgoy Korkoy, in 1944, by Russian paleontologist and science fiction writer Ivan Yefremov, written under the impression of Andrews's book. In 1946 to 49, Yefremov was studying fossils in the Gobi Desert and wrote that he heard the legend of Olgoy Korkoy many times, but nobody claimed to have seen it.
In 1990 and 1992, Ivan Mackerel led small groups of companions into the Gobi Desert to search for the worm. Inspired by Frank Herbert's novel Dune, in which giant fictional sandworms, there's another one, could be brought to the surface by rhythmic thumping, Mackerel constructed a motor-driven thumper and even used small explosions to try to find it.
It was like, there was a science fiction book, so I'm going to try what they did in that. That's so stupid. God, people are fucking idiots. Okay.
But maybe the science fiction book was inspired by real things.
I don't know what
it
was.
I don't think it was. I don't think it was at all.
In 2005, zoological journalist Richard Freeman of the Center for Fortean Zoology mounted an expedition to hunt for the death worm, but came up empty-handed. Freeman's conclusion was that the tales of the worm's powers had to be apocryphal, and that's one of my favorite just sentence fragments from Wikipedia that we've read in recent memory.
The tales of the worm's powers had to be apocryphal.
Yes.
Worm powers.
And that reported sightings likely involved an unknown species of worm lizard or amphisbaena. That's a new word. It's Amphisbaena is a genus in the family Amphisbaenidae, commonly known as worm lizards.
What? Over 100 species are placed in this diverse genus. What the hell?
How have I never heard of this?
Never heard of that.
I don't like it. How is that not just a snake?
It's a worm. It's different.
But it's a reptile.
But it doesn't have like a snake head.
Yeah.
Is a worm a reptile? What is a worm? It's a different thing than a reptile.
Yeah. It's like, you know, it's a mucous membrane animal.
Their wiki page about this is not very helpful.
Oh, boy. No, it's not. It really isn't. Oh, God. The world is so fucked up.
So fucked. Reality TV series Destination Truth conducted an expedition from 2006-2007. I assume they didn't find anything. A New Zealand TV entertainment reporter, David Ferrier of TV3 News, took part in an expedition in August 2009. I just watched his documentary about tickling competitions. Have you ever seen that?
Oh, Tickled? I've heard it's really good.
It's good.
I should watch it.
It's great. But came up empty-handed as well. Oh, too bad. He conducted interviews with locals claiming to have seen the worm and mentioned on his website that the sightings peaked in the 1950s.
Huh. In popular culture, in the 2005 video game Shadow of the Colossus.
Oh, I love that game.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's so great. It was, I mostly just watched Adam play it, but it was like very beautiful visually.
Oh, cool. The 10th boss, Dirge, is speculated to be inspired by the Mongolian death worm due to its ability to move through sand super fast.
I feel like
super fast is not a phrase I've seen on Wikipedia very often.
Super duper fast. Super poisonous, super fast.
I'm like, obviously sandworms are probably related, right? No?
I'm back in L.A.
Oh, sorry. Can you hear
Adam saying, I'm back in L.A.?
He's on the phone.
Yeah, it's fine.
He just got back. He's back in L.A.
Yeah. He's calling everyone on the phone to let them know he's back in L.A.
That seems like an Adam thing to do. He just gets a megaphone and goes up on our roof. I'm back in L.A. Yeah. Mongolian Death Worm is a 2010 TV film that aired on May 8th, 2010 on the Sci-Fi Channel.
All right.
Yes, nobody's seen this thing.
Yeah. This thing's elusive as fuck because it doesn't exist.
Oh, in the sea also, the first thing is graboid. And then when you hover over it, Tremors comes up.
Oh, shit. And then it also has Lambton Worm, which is a legend from County Durham in Northeast England, which is like a very scary looking dragon worm. And then the sandworm from Dune. And I've got to say, the picture of the sandworm from the fucking Dune page is scary as hell.
It looks like a big butthole.
I really don't like it. I really, it's very scary. It's very scary to me.
It just looks like an anus.
Yeah, it's a big anus, but it's very sharp. It looks like a sharp anus.
It's so big. It's,
I don't like it.
It's very toothy, a toothy anus. And there's no Beetlejuice on this page. What gives?
No Beetlejuice on this page. Not into it. thank you for sending us this page.
Thank you.
That concludes Wiki of the Week. It's time now for What Did I Learn?
What did I learn?
Lisa, what did you learn today?
I learned you've got a great pair of pants.
That's true. I'm
so happy for you. It's hard to find good pants.
Thank you so much. It really is. For me especially. Here's the thing. My, hips are narrower than my stomach. And that just makes it really hard for high-waisted.
Which is not unusual.
It's not that unusual, but anything high-waisted just does not fit me right.
Yeah.
Anymore. It used to maybe at one point, but no, I just think it doesn't work. I might have to start wearing, should I wear men's pants?
I don't know. Anyway. I hate buying pants. It's terrible.
It's the worst. The absolute worst.
I
learned that there's a thing called a lizard worm.
Yeah.
It's like a whole fucking subcategory, and I am not happy about it.
It's not a snake, but it's also
It's not a worm either.
But it's a reptile.
But it's a lizard, but it doesn't have any legs. I don't like it.
Do people have them as pets? And is there drama in this community of lizard worm breeders? If there is, tell me about it immediately.
I'm signing up.
I want to know, what are the starter lizard worms? What are the, you know, varsity level lizard worms? What's going on?
That's our show.
That's it.
You can follow me online. I'm at Mr. Emily Hiller.
I'm at Lisa Draws on Instagram and Lisa Hannawalt on Patreon.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. You can email us at babygeniusespodcast@gmail.com. Please stop using our email address to sign up for mailing lists.
Don't do that.
I just went through, by the way, so like, I just went through and like uncovered a bunch of like Baby Geniuses emails that I had missed because they had gotten sent to weird folders for some reason.
Oh, yeah.
And as a result of doing this process, I first of all unsubscribed that email address from like a bunch of different mailing lists that we were on. We had a shitload of random shit coming in. blocked a bunch of PR companies trying to book guests on the podcast without listening to it. But then somehow through that process, I ended up with one unread email in my inbox that will not reveal itself to me.
What?
So now I'm like, I'm at inbox zero, but it says one. And I can't, I've done the thing where you search like label inbox is unread and nothing comes up.
Oh my God, that's so annoying.
And it's making me feel nuts. So if anyone has a fix for that, I'm happy to hear it. But I will just telling you now, I'll get annoyed if what you send me doesn't work. So proceed with caution. I'll be mad at you if you send me something that doesn't work.
It's best not to try.
Yeah. So I mean, this is like, I'm just being open with you all. That, like, this is going to be my attitude. Like, you could either be my hero or my enemy, and you could be neither if you just don't email it to me.
I guess I'll mention one thing, just because we got so many emails and I wrote some stuff down from them. Someone wrote in, I know you're not really doing annoying store names anymore, but I think about your podcast every time I pass this place near me called Crab Salad. Whenever I go past, I get, number one, a craving for crab salad, and number two, disproportionately cross that it is actually a hairdresser's, which I just love. There's a hairdresser's called Crab Salad. And also, after reading this email, I became really hungry for crab salad, and then I ordered it at dinner that night. So,
wow.
And it was really good.
There is a place that we have been like seeing a lot because it's near this like medical center where, anyway, long story. There's a place in Koreatown called Oh My Crab. Have you heard of this place? And it makes me so mad because I don't understand what the pun is.
Oh My Crab.
It's Oh My God, but God doesn't sound like crab at all.
I don't know. That's
doesn't
the kind of
that
thing
that make you mad. It makes me so
mad.
It
makes
mad.
Me mad, but it's also just the kind of thing that'll stick in my head forever. Like this. I just thought about this earlier today, and I say it to, me and Adam say this to each other all the time. It was a thrift store we went to in France, and it was called Thanks God I'm a VIP. And thanks with an X on the end of it. And just,
oh, wow.
There's so many ways we can apply this to our lives. Thanks God I'm a VIP.
That's so funny. Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. Well, anything else?
I think that's it.
Thanks to our producer, editor, Rob Pera.
Yay. Thanks to my brother, Nate Heller, for our theme song.
Yay.
And goodbye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.